In this interview, we're talking about Arlington National Cemetery, more specifically, Section 27.
This is TWIP.
Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. In this episode, I have the honor of speaking with Mr. Michael McCoy. He is a photojournalist, photographer, image maker, those sorts of people. And we're going to be talking about a project that he recently worked on in Section 27 at Arlington National Cemetery. We're going to talk about that, plus a couple of other interesting things in and around how a photojournalist operates in the city of D.C. Mike McCoy, how you doing, man? How's it going?
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, it's great to be here.
It is good to have you, man. First of all, thank you for all the effort. I know we've been chatting back and forth, and you are one of the busiest, hardest working photojournalists in the city, and we finally managed to nail you down and get you in a coffee shop between assignments. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this, man.
I'm just happy to be here with you, man.
Yeah, no, this is good. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about. So let's kick it off with just a little bit of background on you. So you are a photographer, you know, you shoot with Fuji cameras, obviously. You're part of this project that we're working on, and we're going to dive into the Section 27 stuff. But give us a little background on who Mike McCoy is and how you got started in this whole gig of clicking shutters and making money.
Well, everyone knows I'm Mike McCoy. Born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland, and as a kid, I would play around with my father's film camera that he kept in the car. And as I got older, you know, you start meeting girls and kind of put the camera down. But it really wasn't until I got to Iraq, I would always take photographs and I would send them back home to my mother just to let her know that I was safe. And it kind of grew on me a little bit. But you know, after losing my mother when I was in Iraq, and a few other family members, I realized you can't get that time back. So you can't catch up on all of the partying, you know, all of the girls. So, you know, why not just document things?
Yeah.
And and here I am today.
I love that, man. Yeah, that's good. That's the first time I heard somebody position it like that. That's great.
I mean, but think about it. I mean, you can't catch up.
Yeah.
You know, time is the one thing that you cannot get back. You can have all of the money in the world. You can have all of the jewelry. You can have all of the women. You can have all of the cars. But you can't have all of the time. And, you know, once that moment's gone, it's gone. And, you know, and that's why this camera to, you know, capture those important moments.
Yeah, no, for real. Now, speaking of the cameras, like I mentioned in the beginning of this, this is part of this Fujifilm Visual Momentum series that we're putting together. Why did you choose Fuji? What was your path to choosing Fuji over, you know, any of the other brands out there?
You know, I was a Nikon shooter at one time, and there's nothing wrong with Nikon, but I just love Fuji. You know, I just love its small, compact size, the quiet shutter. You know, depending on which camera you're using, like if you're using like the X100 series, you know, that thing can be like totally silent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, versus some of your, you know, bigger cameras, you know, they're going to make a noise. I'll give you an example. I was shooting a funeral one day, and, you know, thankfully for the Fuji, I was able to shoot that funeral, you know, capture those images without being a distraction to a grieving family.
Yeah.
And with cameras like your Nikons and your Canons and some of the other DSLRs, you just don't have that flexibility. And, you know, that's one great thing I like about Fuji, other than its amazing colors.
And that's one of the things I hear about all the time is the Fuji look and the Fuji color palette and the way it renders color. But one of the other things I want to talk to you about, since I have a DC-based photographer, you shoot a lot of political stuff, I would imagine, out there, right?
So I do.
Does the silent shutter ever factor into that? Like you're like in a deposition or some sort of, you know, impeachment hearing or something, and you gotta be silent about it. Does it factor in there?
No, I haven't been to any impeachment hearings yet. But once I do go, I'm definitely gonna test that out again. but you know, on the hill, you know, the majority of the guys on the hill, they're shooting DSLRs, and some guys have migrated to mirrorless. You know, some are using more Fuji. maybe the Nikon Z series and Canon's mirrorless camera, and occasionally Sony. So you don't really find like a lot of Fuji shooters on the hill besides myself and I think one other guy. But it really doesn't matter. But
it's just whatever works for you, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, you find it's like it's just like we talk about. It's like life. You don't get time back, and the minutes you do spend on the planet, why not shoot with something that you like versus something
that you love?
Yeah, something that you love. Yeah,
I love it, man.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I hear from Fuji shooters all the time. Really, okay. So let's switch gears. I want to talk about the project, Section 27. So for the folks that may not know. Tell us about, first of all, let's start at the top. Tell us what Arlington National Cemetery is for the folks outside the country that may not understand the significance of that place. And then we'll dive into one section inside Arlington.
Okay. Well, for those who don't know, Arlington Cemetery is one of the country's largest military cemeteries. And it's home to lots of veterans and their families. And it's also the home of JFK, Joe Louis, Mega Evers. Who else is buried there? James Chappie. Mm-hmm. He was the Air Force's first four-star general of color. Wow. And but then we also have Section 27. And many people aren't aware of Section 27 because no one ever talks about it. You know, if you go to the cemetery and you look into one of their programs, you may see something there in very small print, but no one ever goes into the history of 27. Even if you were to take a guided tour through the cemetery, you know, the tour guides and the bus drivers, they talk about every other part of the cemetery except 27. All right, so man, I don't know why they don't talk about 27. Maybe the bus drivers, the tour guides aren't trained. Maybe they choose not to talk about it. But, you know, me as the photographer, it's my job and it's my duty to talk about those stories that often don't get told. Yeah. And, like, for instance, you know, William H. Chrisman, he was the first person buried at Arlington Cemetery, and he was a black man.
Wow. And he was the first one buried there in the whole place?
Yes. Yes, sir. Okay. And many people don't know that.
Wow. You know? So is it so the Section 27, it's a section where it's primarily, if not all, black people or people of color, right? That are in that are buried and laid to rest in that section. And like you said, it's notable names that are in there. But part of the issue that you wanted to shine a light on was the fact that tours, et cetera, just kind of blow right by that. Why do you think that is? Why are people just like, why aren't the historians and tour guides, et cetera, talking about the significance of Section 27?
You know, like your guess is good as mine. You know, I don't know what those guys are thinking or their reasoning, you know, for not talking about it. And I wish they would talk about it. But until they do, I mean, I hope that this story and this platform here could educate more people about the importance of Section 27 and hopefully spark some conversations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell me, let's dive into the project itself. So this wasn't a day you just decided to go out there and take some pictures. This happened over a period of time. Take me through the project itself and how you came up with the idea and what was the, because, you know, as a photojournalist, as a photographer, you get an idea and you have to go do it. So from that point all the way through to you're ready to show people, what was that process like?
Well, you know, I would go to the cemetery several times a year. I would go on like Veterans Day, Memorial Day, and Christmas. So for Veterans Day, Memorial Day, the soldiers lay flags on all of the graves, and for Christmas they lay wreaths. And one thing I noticed, no one really knew about 27. You know, like you would have young soldiers that were assigned to the Old Guard, which is the army unit that maintains the cemetery, and I would have black soldiers, and they would not know that the section that they were standing in is, you know, it was the burial ground for black soldiers who paved the way for soldiers like myself and those soldiers, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So I just started noticing, and I would just go back occasionally just to look around, and like you wouldn't see anything. And it was, I want to say, was it last year? President Trump decided to go to the cemetery for Memorial Day, and I noticed the mass of the people went over to section, I forgot the section where the tomb is, but they went over to the tomb of an unknown soldier. And section 27, I think I may have encountered like six people that entire day. I met a couple from North Carolina who knew about 27. But then there were, I want to say, four staff members of the cemetery. It was, I want to say, like three security guards that worked for the cemetery and like maybe one or two military police officers. Then they were all people of color. So that day, the only people that I saw on that side of the cemetery were black people, and they were working.
Interesting.
And, I mean, it was like a big history lesson because the security guards knew what they were guarding, but the young African-American active duty soldier, he didn't know. Yeah. But once I told him, you know, he was amazed. And I could see, like, the honor and the dignity that he had once he knew what he was guarding right there.
So, you know, I wonder if you haven't hit on something that is a longer project than maybe just Section 27, because you and I both know that the White House itself was built by slaves, right? And
oh, yeah.
The Washington Monument and, you know, a lot of the bedrock.
The Capitol.
The Capitol, yeah. A lot of the bedrock, the whole Washington.
World.
Yeah, the world, yeah. So maybe that's a bigger story. You know, have you considered expanding out and telling that story as well about, you know, black people and their contribution to, you know, starting with the nation's capital?
It's crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. But in order to do stuff like this, I'm gonna have to have funding. And as a freelance photojournalist, you know, I love to do passionate work that tells great stories. But without funding, it makes those projects near impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to do passionate work, but you also have a habit of eating, right?
Yeah. I get a cup of coffee every now and then. You know?
Exactly. I know. I got the same problem, man. I'm addicted to food, water, and shelter. I don't know how to break the habit.
And Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. So I want to, you know, on that same token, I wanted to talk about just like a day in the life or the life in a black photojournalist's world in a city like DC, which has its share of drama and, you know, being the nation's capital or not, it has its share of drama, of violence, and, you know, you got your politics, you got your violence, and this is just me on the West Coast looking in. I can't imagine what it's like being on the inside of it. Can you tell us what a day in the life for Mike McCoy looks like? I'd imagine you're just like running around and, you know, oh, something happened over there. I got to be over there. Okay, now there's a hearing. I got to go over there. You know, how does it work?
It all depends. I mean, a normal day on the Hill, hearings, stakeouts, briefings. A normal day for me, which a lot of people don't see, and you may see it if you watch C-SPAN or if you're watching maybe CNN, they may show those kind of shots, but normally you're like the only person of color. It's a male-dominated industry. You may find some females, but for the most part, you find white male photojournalists. And
How do they treat you? I mean, is it do you feel like it's just, you know, we're all photographers, we're all trying to get the shot, or do you feel like there's a why is he here kind of syndrome going on?
I don't want to say is why is he here, but one thing that I do notice, you know, in the beginning, you know, like very few people would talk to me, and even to this day, I mean, everyone knows who I am. We speak, but there's only maybe two or three out of, I don't know how many, you know, journals on the Hill that would actually sit there and, you know, have a conversation, even have lunch with me.
Wow, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, you know, I wanted to, I mean, we could talk about this topic for hours, the Arlington topic and being a photographer in DC. But I'm curious, are there any on the Section 27 side of things, are there any sort of stories that pop out of your head, you know, that are just like, okay, this, whenever you think of that, whenever you think of Section 27, you think of this particular shot for a reason. Are there any things like that come into mind?
When I think of Section 27, I just think about all of the people who paved the way for, you know, people like myself and you. You know, yeah. We're both vets, and without the contributions of our fellow African-American soldiers who served before us, we wouldn't have the same liberties that we have now. Hell, we wouldn't be here doing this podcast.
Right.
So when I think of 27, I think about a lot of these brave brothers and sisters who served and did heroic things. And a lot of people don't know, but Section 27 is also the home of, don't misquote me, but I want to say like maybe 4 or 5 recipients of the Medal of Honor.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
So, I mean, that's what I think about when I think of 27.
Yeah. So I think one of the takeaways from this interview is next time you find yourself in D.C. and you're contemplating the different tourist places you're going to go, put Section 27 on the map along with the White House. And when you go to the White House, raise your hand and say, you know, who built this place? Where'd you guys get all that labor to build this place? It's amazing. You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's coming up next for Mike McCoy? What's on your radar?
I start this new project tomorrow. It's going to be really, really, really major. Hopefully I can talk a little more about it.
Oh, a secret?
In a couple of weeks. I don't want to say a secret, but I mean, like, your entire, like, base will have to sign an NDA.
That would make a secret. That's cool. How long is that project last? Because when we were talking offline, you were saying you were working on something that's going to be, like, 10 hours a day for a while, right?
Yeah, so I'm going to be doing this tomorrow. Up until Wednesday, 10 hours a day, I'm going to be, like, freaking tired.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, it's better to be tired of that than tired of sitting at home waiting on the phone to ring. Right?
I know, right? Yeah.
That's cool. So you're going to – so all these jobs, you know, I know the This Week in Photo audience is always curious about gear and post-processing and all that stuff. So take us through the kit that you're going to – like on this next job you're going to do. Take us through the kit that you're going to take there, and then what does the post-processing of that job look like? Do you send whomever raw files, or do you send them processed JPEGs, or what does it look like?
Well, with this job here, I mean, everything's all Fuji. So, like, my day-to-day, you know, I generally carry my Fuji X-T2 or 3, my H1, a 16-55, a 50-140. That's just, like, walk-around gear for the hill. I may go with a fixed lens every now and then, depending on what I'm doing. But for most stuff on the hill, you may not always have access to move around freely, so you always want to have some type of, you know, flexibility. So that's why I use the zoom lens. But I'm also keep a 23 f2, a 35 1.4, and a 50 f2 in the bag, because you never know when you're going to need it. But then every now and then I may break out the 200 f2, and those are like some really, 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 you can make some really tight portraits with those, that long lens.
Yeah.
But, you know, for this job here, I'm pretty much going to have that same setup minus the 200, but I'm also going to be using the GFX 50S, which I'm very, very excited to use. So I actually picked that up this morning, and I went home and I programmed it to mirror my other cameras. And I just can't wait to play around with it. Hopefully after this interview, I can go out and take some test shots.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Have you seen that? I know we're photographer nerding out now. have you seen that 100 megapixel Fuji camera?
I haven't had a chance to, like, hold it in my hand, but I hear, like, lots of good things about it.
Yeah, would you ever consider using something like that in photojournalism, or is it more of just a studio portrait camera?
It depends. You have guys like David Berto, and he's a photojournalist, and he does a lot of work for Time, and he does a lot of work for Redux, and he has a very, very unique style. and he shoots a lot with like the Leica M series, and occasionally he'll use a medium format camera. So I can see myself doing something like that.
Yeah, nice, interesting. Well, but, keep us posted. I'm curious to see how that bag evolves and all that stuff. I mean, Fuji and mirrorless cameras in general are light, right? But you got a lot of stuff in your bag. I can't. So,
a computer, like 10 batteries, computer, chargers, headphones.
Wow. All right, I'm gonna leave it this. I heard a rumor, and you tell me if this is true or not. Have you've been inside the White House shooting, right?
I have not.
Oh, you haven't been in there. You heard this rumor? I heard a rumor that the press corps that goes into the White House, I don't know if they're doing that anymore, but they used to have to line up outside and wait for them to let them in, and it was kind of a first come first serve basis. And this photojournalist was telling me that they would have to, some of them would just wear adult diapers and stand in line so that they could just, you know, let's say, be comfortable without having to make a beeline to Starbucks or something. Did you ever hear anything like that?
I haven't, man, but I don't doubt it.
Yeah, that's a good idea, isn't it? You're going to go get some of those, right?
Yeah.
Depends.
They're not going to have too much weight in my bag. Hopefully not.
Exactly. At least not at the beginning of the day.
Oh, man.
Awesome. All right, Mike McCoy. If people want to follow your work and check out your shots, and during this interview, I'll have overlaid some shots of Section 27, and in the blog post where this is embedded, there'll be a photo gallery so they can see those shots. But if they want to see other work that you've done, or like this gig that you're going to be starting shortly, where should they go check your stuff out at?
They can check out my website. It's www.michaelamcoy, all one word, photography.com. Or you can check out my Instagram page. It's Michael A. McCoy Photography. And my Twitter is Mike McCoy Photo.
Perfect.
And you can always catch me on there. And if you have any questions, please feel free to, you know, shoot me a message.
Awesome. Yeah, and I'll put all those will, if I do my job right, those will have been on the screen during the interview, and they'll be in the blog post and in the YouTube description as well. So, you know, you won't be hard to find. Mike McCoy, thank you so much for taking the time to do this and all the effort. I know putting these interviews together, especially with busy working photojournalists, is not easy. And you're one of the busier ones, right? And you are. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview.
Well, I mean, thank you for having me, man. Like, I'm a big fan of your show, and I'm just happy that you guys thought that much of me to like have me on.
Awesome. No, of course. The honor is all ours. So trust me. All right, man. You enjoy the rest of your day, and stay in touch. Keep us posted. I want to have you on again when you finish that other project, because I'm curious. I want to hear about it.
Absolutely, man. All right. I definitely look forward to coming back.
Yep, yeah. No, you're in the family now, so just let us know when you're ready to come back. Anytime. All right, Mike McCoy, photojournalist, Washington, D.C., Section 27. Take care, man. Thank you.
Peace.
This is Twitter.